Welcome to the Nerder Podcast, you Snapple Podcast.
Oh my god.
Now come on baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up, y'all.
N-E-R-D up. N-E-R-D up.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. Let's see here. I'm Guilty Wilson, and I'm with
Eric Billingsley
and Tim Coker.
That was weird. We're all here.
I think Eric's just excited to be back.
I think so.
Special post Halloween show.
Yeah. Well, this is now the second one since he's got a life back that we got Eric back, and then Tim. It's been a little while for you too, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a reunion special. We're gonna show flashbacks of previous episodes. Remember that when the 80s and 70s when they used to do those flashback episodes of TV shows?
Oh, absolutely. It was always such a disappointment.
Yeah. It's like, oh, remember that time when, and now that's pretty much all Family Guy is, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, right. Nobody does that anymore, which is actually, you're right. I think that's the reason why they were pretty much a disappointment. All right. Well, we won't do that then. But anyway, we got a few things to talk about, but before we do that, I got to push some of our proud sponsors of the podcast. Let's see. First of all, if you like nerdy stuff, if you like going to cons, if you like having that fun, well, let me tell you how you can get a monthly con sent to you at your home every single month. And there's two different choices. There is Loot Crate, which you probably heard of, one of the most popular crate of nerdy goodness. They send you a box every month, and every month you get all sorts of good, cool things. Then they got specialized crates, too, you can order, which are like anime Loot Crate, and then they got like horror Loot Crates, and then other special ones, too. But anyway, if you want to try that out, go to the nerduppodcast.com website, click on the banner, go over there, sign up, and we get a little help on the podcast with that. Also, Geek Fuel, that's another one of those. This one is, I don't know, I just kind of ran across it. Isaac did the Loot Crate thing for the longest time, and I did it for a couple of months, and I thought, yeah, it's cool, but Isaac and I are getting the same thing. So I said, I'm going to try one different. And now each month we get the boxes right around the same time, and we trade each other stuff back and forth. So it's really cool. But Geek Fuel is another one. And Geek Fuel, every month they have a guaranteed t-shirt. And also every month there is a video game of some sort. Most of the time, in fact, I think all the time, it's a Steam download. So if you're into the Steam games, then there you go. Go with the Geek Fuel. So anyway, yeah, check them out. And, it's like having a Comic-Con come to your house once a month. And if you order both of them, then you can have two Comic-Cons come to your house. And that's really cool. So anyway, check them out on nerduppodcast.com. So let's talk about nerdy stuff here, guys. I know one of the things we're going to talk about, we'll start out talking about Luke Cage a little bit, and then we're going to move into that other Marvel thing, Doctor Strange, love. How'd that go? How I fell in love with, anyway. Let's start talking about Luke Cage, because Tim Coker, I've been dying to hear about what you thought of Luke Cage.
I really, really liked Luke Cage, actually. I thought it was a very entertaining show. It was full of surprises. Unfortunately, I am not able to speak as frankly about said surprises as I would like, because Mr. Eric has only seen the first two or three episodes.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, slow. Just speaking in top line, I think the show did a really great job of keeping the plot surprising. They did a really good job looking at, like, I don't know, I've, with the exception of really of Daredevil season two, all three of these shows have surprised me in the level of kind of conceptual sophistication they bring to what they're doing, where they're actually thinking about more than just putting up a show about super people punching each other. You know, the way that Jessica Jones is so about issues of consent and stalking and all that stuff. And I really thought that it was fascinating how Luke Cage, like the show, really obsessively chews on this bone of like what history means and how history is something that informs what you do. And it's a gift, but it's also a curse. And it's something that everybody on the show is pretty much struggling with the weight of. I mean, not just the history of the people who came before them in Harlem and what Harlem's history means and all that. And I guess even where they fit in the conversation of with Black America overall, but even their own personal histories. And I just thought that was a really beautiful factor that that show had that made it better than it had to be. You know, it especially like with Cottonmouth, I thought that the way his character grapples with his own personal history was really surprising for me. So, I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great.
You know, and the one thing we talked about with Tim Matson briefly, again, because of Eric, is that the music they used in this was just one of the best. That's one of the best things I've seen used in a soundtrack. I mean, we talked about comparing it to the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. It's just that great. I mean, they use the music perfectly, and it like set the mood for everything going on. And I mean, even the incidental music and the opening credit music, that was all just perfect.
Yeah. You're so right. It is, and it's funny because it's a world musically that I don't know a lot about because I don't spend a lot of time in R&B and hip hop realms. You know, I'm very like white boy musical taste. So it was great for me to kind of come in cold and see these artists who, most of whom I didn't know, some of them I did, but I really appreciated it. I thought it was, and it's interesting that the showrunner was, you know, at one point in his career was a hip hop music critic, you know, so it makes sense that the music in the show is so carefully curated, you know?
Yeah, that's the best way to put it right there. Carefully curated. I like that. I might have to use that more often too, by the way, carefully curated among everything, other things in my life. But anyway.
Well, and it isn't just the music. It's there are all kinds of pop culture references. There is the, you know, the writers that, you know, Pops and Luke talk about, or, you know, there's the painting, you know, or not the painting, the photo of Biggie Smalls that's on Cottonmouth's office. And then later, I'm not going to say where, but there's a really important painting hung up, you know, that's by Jean-Michel Basquiat, you know, who is kind of, you know, this, you know, he's an artist, you know, of sort of more high gallery art. And it's interesting that, you know, each of these paintings kind of, or pictures kind of makes the comment on what the aspiration is of the person who's hanging the picture up.
Right.
And what it means to them. But that's something that, you know, if you're just watching the show and you don't know any of that stuff, it's just like, oh, those are cool pictures. But the level of thought that went into that really impressed me.
Yeah, I agree with you. The use of those paintings, especially the Biggie Smalls through the first half of it, at least. The use of that is like, oh, there's some symbology. But all right, well, I'm glad to see. I wanted to hear what you had to say about it, but we can't. Like I said, we can't say too much about it because Eric needs to catch up. Eric, now that you have your life back,
yeah,
I am going to get caught up. No life for a long time, and then I got, had to catch up with some Halloween viewing, and now that's out of the way. I'll get back to Luke Cage, which I have seen the first two or three episodes, but it's really not enough to be able to make any kind of a opinion about the show at this point.
Well, when you do, we're going to talk about it in depth because there's a whole lot to talk about on this show. A lot.
I will try to get caught up this week.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, you know, hey, now that you got a life, wasted on Netflix. So, all right, well, let's talk about something we have all seen. Isaac even saw it, and I can't believe he didn't want to get in on the podcast about it, but Doctor Strange. Oh,
woo-hoo,
man. First of all, I saw the memes came out immediately, and I got to share this one with everybody. This one I saw just as when I got back from the theater this afternoon. Basically, the top three Doctor Strange quotes. Number one, Dormammu, I have come to bargain. Number two, Dormammu, I have come to bargain. Number three, Dormammu, I have come to bargain. I loved it. I just like cracked up and I'm like, yep. But yeah, the memes
are
rolling.
That's a good joke.
I thought so, especially when you see the movie, you're like, oh, that's funny. But yeah, I'll start out because, you know, I like to do that, and then I like to sit back and listen to you guys talk about the movies in more depth. But I'll start out talking about, you know, I saw a few reviews from some friends of mine that I'm just going to have to no longer consider them friends because they said it was one of the worst Marvel movies made ever. And I didn't see that. Let's see. But someone else said something about the soundtrack was horrible. Why did they have to rehash the Star Trek movie soundtrack to do this one? I didn't see that either. So it's like, okay, I'm just going to have to make these people no longer my friends. But anyway, Benedict Cumberbatch, you know, the guy can't really do any wrong. He's kind of like the British Chris Pratt sometimes. But he...
he was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, when he wants to be, he can be. But when he's playing Khan, I just don't think that... That might be the problem, but
that wasn't his fault. Really.
Yeah, true. Exactly.
he was the wrong actor for the part, but you know, let's not talk about that movie. Yeah,
there you go.
Let's pretend it didn't work.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, he's a very, you know, I don't know. He's an in your head type of an actor, or in his own head type of actor. You could see the thought processes going on, whatever he's doing. Even when it was with Sherlock, you could see his mental processes in solving the crime. In this, you could see the mental processes of what you know. Like, for example, when all of a sudden he gets shown this the other world, or the multiverse, it's like you can see in his head, like, what? You know, he can act with his face better than most people that I know. Well, you know, he's up there anyway. And that's one of the things I really appreciated. It was a bit of a, you know, he didn't rely on the dialogue to get this one along. However... I was super glad to see that they stuck with a lot of aspects of the comic book. My favorite character in this one was Wong. It's his manservant in the comic books. And my favorite thing in the comic books was every time Spider-Man would come over, Spider-Man would make an effort to try to make Wong laugh. And in this movie, they did that with Doctor Strange. Now, I thought it was like odd because...
That's great.
Yeah, I thought it was odd because, oh, does that mean we're going to see Spider-Man try to do the same thing? And it's like, oh, let's only hope. But we'll have to see about that one. But yeah, in the Spider-Man comics, he's always, whenever he goes to Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum, it's like, you know, he tries to make him laugh, and he never does. And so now they did it in the movie, and it's like, oh, they brought that to life. And so I thought that was cool. Baron Mordo, now a bad guy. I was wondering why he was a good guy, because he's in the comics, he's always been a bad guy as far as I knew. And so now, spoiler, he's the bad guy, kind of, sort of, at the end.
That was one of my problems with the film.
Yeah.
And then, finally, my other issue that I had with this movie is the fact that I saw it in 3D. And the whole thing, there were a lot of times I was so distracted and got lost in all the 3D effects that I almost lost some of the story. But I'm, you know, the 3D effects were awesome, I thought, but
the screen is very busy. So I can see how you could get distracted.
Yeah. And
a lot to take in.
Yeah. And I was also trying to, you know, every once in a while I was like, I'd say, oh, is there an Easter egg in there somewhere? But, you know, but it's like, there was so much going on the huge screen. It's hard to focus on the characters right in the middle, you know? So again,
yep.
It was good 3D effects. I mean, it was fun, but it kind of took me out of the story a little bit. But anyway, I thought they captured the comic book Doctor Strange pretty well. Again, it was an origin story. So, and they did say at the end, the post credit scene, that they're, you know, Doctor Strange will be back. After all, he does have the time in Infinity Stone. So, hey, we're going to see him lots of times. All right, so,
yay.
Yeah, I think so. Especially in the Infinity Wars, I think that's going to be a big one. Let's start out with Eric. Eric, what do you think of Doctor Strange? Give me your full review and what you loved and hated.
Well, it's definitely not Marvel's strongest film, but I certainly am not going, it's nowhere near as bad as, say, like Iron Man 2 or even 3, in my opinion.
Right.
I hope that I'm wrong, but I see that in some ways, especially like with their central properties, that Marvel is starting to fall into a overly familiar formula that is becoming a little too predictable, and it's starting to register with me, and I'm not being surprised by any of the plot details in most of these films that are happening now. That much said, I enjoy the character because honestly, this film is carried by Benedict Cumberbatch. I don't think that the script is that strong. The villain, and this is another problem with a lot of the current batch of comic book movies, is the villain seems generic and disposable as, you know, villain number one, villain number two. And I mean, it's played by one of my favorite actors, Mads Mikkelsen, but he can't really, he's not really given much to do in the film.
There's no character there.
Yeah.
It's not in the script.
Yeah, exactly. But Cumberbatch takes, you know, a kind of threadbare character from the script and actually really fills him out. So I don't know that that's necessarily saying something that, you know, Cumberbatch is more talented than Mikkelsen, but he really does manage to pull the most out of the script, which is, you know, saying a lot because I didn't think the script was very strong. You know, as an origin story, it's decent. The things that kind of really got to me were really nerdy, nitpicky things, but that's kind of what we're about. So
that's right.
talk about it, man. Like for instance,
during the astral fight that they have in the hospital. Mm. Okay, sometimes they would hit the wall and they'd bounce off the wall. Sometimes they would fly through the wall.
I know, right?
If they could fly through the wall, why wouldn't they fall through the floor? Yeah, just the movie. This is something that drives me crazy about any genre films, is that most genre films, is they set these rules in a universe that's, you know, not real, that they've created, and then they proceed to break them. Now, of course, the story, such as it is for the film, is about, you know, breaking rules when you have to, which kind of leads it into an interesting kind of minefield territory, as far as I'm concerned, is to, okay, if he's already made the decision that, okay, when I need to, I'm going to break the rules of nature or whatever. And of course, I know that they're at some point, probably in the next movie or whenever he shows up again, he's not going to have that stone. It's going to be removed from him somehow. Mm-hmm. He's going to lose it. It's going to be stolen because he's way too powerful with it. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem that I have with a lot of really powerful superheroes, is unless you tie kryptonite around their neck or do some, you know, this Deus Ex Machina, or this, you know, go-to standard for basically handicapping your hero, it's problematic. And with Doctor Strange, I think that that's even more so, because it's his powers aren't really defined. At least, this is coming from someone who didn't read the comics, so I'm going completely based upon the film. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can tell, there's not really much limit to what he can do, and therefore what would really put up much of a challenge for him unless you take away part of his powers. And then the other thing that bothered me about the film was the character, I forgot the character you said it, that you were just speaking about, that you said was the villain.
Mordo?
Mordo, yes. His change at the end and in the post credits sequence was just so out of left field, and I'm just like, okay, you just went from, you know, the needle just went from one end to the other with absolutely no transition whatsoever. You know, suddenly he's decided that since Doctor Strange has broken the rules, that now he's going to go around and assassinate every sorcerer in the universe, but he's going to start with some poor guy. Yeah. He simply used the power to heal his back so he could walk. I was like, what the F is that about?
Got to start small, I guess.
You're so right.
Really made me mad. I was just like, that is such a cheat. That's just so unwarranted by anything in the script.
Well, right, because leading up to that in the movie, pretty much he seems like a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you know, so you get this idea that there's something inherently terrible about the dark dimension energy, right? And that's what makes him so upset that he just effectively snaps. And, you know, like, you never see what that bad thing is that he's reacting to.
Yeah.
Like, they tell you, you know, he says that it's bad, but they never give you any suggestion that Doctor Strange has anything to be worried about, you know, that maybe there is a corner he's cutting that's going to bite him in the ass later. I mean, I've actually been reading the current Doctor Strange comics that Marvel's been putting out, and that's been the theme of this, you know, this storyline, is that magic has a cost, and he has been cheating his way out of paying it for a long, long time, and it's catching up. You know, thing is, like they so want to get you to that fist pumping, kind of feeling, that they completely gloss over what was wrong. What could, because I don't have any idea what was wrong with what the Ancient One was doing that would be so bad. And yeah, so then to have Mordo just suddenly take this heel turn where he becomes this like fanatical killer is okay. He doesn't kill the guy, but he might as well.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like this fanatical like ass. And it's, I just, that was, again, I hate that my first real words on this movie and the podcast are negative, but it was a real like, and especially I'll say it, it's the last scene you get at the end of the credits. So you've had a pretty good time watching the movie. It has its problems, but it's a solid movie and it's fun, you know, and then the little after credits scene is really good. I won't say what it is in case people haven't seen it. That one's worth not spoiling, but then you stay to the credits through the credits. And then the last scene is just this really depressing moment that comes out of nowhere. And like, it's just like, oh, were you having fun? Sorry. Here's something that we didn't earn, but it makes us seem like, ooh, next time's going to be exciting. I don't know.
Yeah, it was like,
was just kind of sad.
The way I look at it is that Mordo, everybody that reads the comics knows Mordo's an enemy. And so they just had to make him an enemy. And so like you said, they glossed it over and just, okay, yeah, here, see, now he's an enemy. See, that's what we did. And that's it. You know, it's like, why was not included? But they did it. I mean, I can see it. I mean, one of the things I looked at, like in the Harry Potter series, as soon as someone used black magic, they were like immediately sent to prison. Okay, that was it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what happened here. Okay, the ancient one used a little bit of dark magic. They didn't call it black magic, but she used the dark. And then Dr. Strange used some of the dark, cheated a little bit. So I guess Mordo said, well, if they can do it, so can I. You know? I mean, it's weird. It's just all of a sudden, that's kind of the only explanation I got out of it.
Well, I'm going to use one of our favorite shows as a counterpoint for this is Babylon 5. There are character turns in Babylon 5 that are drastic, that are just like come out of left field, but they're earned. The groundwork has been laid for that to happen. So when it does, when you see a character, you know, make a 90 degree turn, it's been prepared for. It doesn't feel like a cheat. But that in this movie is a cheat. It wasn't earned. It wasn't paid for. It was just taken on their own volition and we're expected to deal with it. And it's just, it just was a nasty trick, I felt like, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know what it felt like? It felt like at the end of Star Wars Episode 3, if you can bear to go back and remember that movie, right? Revenge of the Sith. We're like, all of a sudden, you know, at the end of the movie, they're like, Master Qui-Gon figured out a way to come back from the other side of the Force, or back from the dead, so you're going to have to study with him. And it's like, oh, yeah, we forgot to talk about that. And it's like, you know what I mean? It has the feeling like, oh, shoot, we didn't cover Mordo coming back as a bad guy next time.
Right. Yeah.
It's a shame. It's really, and there is some sloppy stuff like that in this movie, in the script department, where it's really, you know, they've made enough of these movies now where they should realize, oh, yeah, you know, we made this mistake before in Thor: The Dark World, you know, and in Guardians of the Galaxy, where the villain is super boring and there's nothing there, you know. And I don't know, like the best Marvel screen villains, you know, and I'm talking about like Loki. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say I actually really like Aldrich Killian from the third Iron Man movie. From the TV, Kilgrave and the Kingpin, right?
Oh yeah.
And even Arnim Zola, they have some level of relatable motivation. You kind of understand them. They seem like beings, like people in a way, you know.
Right.
And you get it. And you know the this new guy Caecilius, you know, he comes from the pool of guys who sort of grimly go about the work of messing everything up for the universe, you know. Like it's like Ronan and Malekith, where there's no character there. Their character is that they're a gigantic asshole, you know.
Yep.
like that's all the character they get is that, yes, I'm a gigantic asshole about everything.
Okay. They were that high school bully that grew up.
Yeah, but also, it's like the filmmakers were afraid that like a really interesting villain would take away from the rest of the movie or something. Like I don't understand why they would be so so kind of blasé about that, because I, you know, you can do better.
Yeah.
It's all there. And anyway,
and this Dormammu character, I mean, how is he any different? How is he not just a generic stand-in for Thanos, really? I mean, how is he different from Thanos other than he looks a little different?
Well, he, you know, okay, in Marvel, I'll put my Marvel patent hat on, and he was created probably 10 years before Thanos. Mm-hmm. So that's
right,
one.
Right. I mean, referring to the comics, you know, I mean, just based on what they're giving us in the movie.
Well, but the reason you bring up Thanos as somebody who doesn't know the comics is telling, and it's because, like Ronan, Caecilius was just a flunky, basically, who we have to watch waste our time before the big bad comes out and does what they're supposed to do. And in both cases, you know, this big bad is sort of just off screen. And in the Marvel Universe has a ton, you know, okay, not a ton, but they have a pretty deep bench of big bad level bad guys, you know, that they've come up with over the span of 50 years. But they're like, they're ranks of middle management villains like Caecilius and Ronan is like an army. I mean, there are so many of these guys, and that's, I guess that's the problem, is that just like with Ronan, they just kind of pranced around, and you know, you never really take them seriously. You're like, yeah, no, this guy's not gonna be the guy that you know, that can take it all down. And it just feels like, yeah, they're kind of like, well, we'll get to the really cool villain later, because this is just the origin story. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, it was when, what's his name, when Martin Short used to do the, you know, give me a C, a bouncy C. And he'd do like, you know, his name was Waistcoat Willie. He drove all the girls silly and blah, 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 whatever else you want to put in there. It really feels like that, where he's just like tossing it off, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing. I'll have to jump in on this, on Dormammu. He was kind of a letdown for me. I mean, I understand the mythos behind it. Dormammu's like, you know, big bad. I mean, this guy's, you know, I guess you could almost say the equivalent of Satan in a religious aspect. But, you know, they never could really say Satan. That's why the Son of Satan comic books didn't last long. But anyway, Dormammu was, you know, that's kind of his equivalent. But he's like, I don't know, Malbolgia in Spawn comics. Or something. I mean, he's like a ruler, you know, and like you said, like Thanos is a ruler, and these other guys are his army. But the thing is, he didn't seem that powerful.
Yeah, doesn't it seem a little hard to take him seriously as a threat when Doctor Strange comes in and on his first attempt basically bamboozles the guy and hogties him in short order without much effort at all, really.
With the bargain.
Yeah, no, it's a problem. It's like you get a bait and switch on the villain, you know, and like all through the movie, the one villain is not actually that scary, because all you ever see him doing is just doing badass stuff, but you never find out who he is. You never find out why. You know what I mean? It's weird. It's like that aspect of it is really perfunctory. And I'm making all of these whiny complaints about a movie that I honestly like and plan to go see again on Thursday and would recommend to anybody that enjoys a Marvel movie, because, you know, it hits the marks pretty well. It's just that, you know, it could have been a lot better.
But that's,
I don't know.
Yeah, from our point of view. But that's the thing. That's what we do here on the Nerd Up podcast, is we love to pick these things because, you know, I mean, whereas before, like Batman v Superman, we can just say, man, that movie freaking sucked. Done. That's all we have to say. Where this one is like, gosh, this is awesome, but hey, come on, look at this little piece. You know, we have to do that.
Now, I'm the token noob when it comes to comic book history, so, you know, I may really step in when I say this, but I see that, you know, there are obviously parallels between Marvel and DC characters. Some of them are blatant ripoffs. But I see a connection between Doctor Strange and, had the series that got canceled from
Laser.
Constantine. Yeah. That there seems to be, I mean, there's a similar arc to their stories, you know, and that they've basically cheated death, or they've cheated, you know, hell, or cheat, you know, that they've somehow managed to, you know, play evil against itself, and that they're like kind of on borrowed time. But I don't know, maybe, you know, I don't know that much about either character. So, you know, I have read some, of course, Constantine comics long, long time ago, but I've never read any Doctor Strange, so I may be way off base there.
Well, I don't see a lot. I mean, like, I'll say that they both are characters who exist within, you know, a generally technologically driven and super-powered universe, right? That instead, they're characters that are kind of, you know, masters of the mystic arts, the arcane as it were, arts, yeah. But I think they come from pretty different places. I mean, at least for me, and again, this is me having been a Doctor Strange fan since I was a little kid, you know, is that he's not, he doesn't really exist in the same universe of no-win scenarios that Constantine does. He's much more, okay. He's much more in the superhero universe where there are, you know, there are positive outcomes, you know, and yeah. that it's not all designed to be kind of deconstructionist and depressing and,
gotcha.
And messed up. And there isn't any sense of him having sold his soul or being on borrowed time, really. He's a guy who, you know, who turned his life around and discovered his calling. And this is his calling, is being, you know, the master of the mystic arts. So, you know, he doesn't.
But for watching the movie, though, and not having that background, it looks like he has made a deal with the devil in, you know, in his little thing with Dormammu, which, you know, may not be,
right.
you know, consistent with the comics that, you know, Marvel has made those changes before. But as someone who's not familiar with the comics, that's very much the impression I walked mm-hmm. away with, is that, you know, Doctor Strange has made this bargain that is, you know, is going to come due at some point. And, you know, I'm not sure where that's going to go. But that's what put me in mind of Constantine.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I can tell you that I never got the selling a soul, but I do understand with that making that bargain that can kind of come back and bite him. And I have a feeling that we're probably going to see that in some aspect, either in the next Doctor Strange or in the Infinity Wars or something. You never know. But yeah, I can see where you're getting with that, but. I don't know. Doctor Strange has got his own source. He didn't have to sell nothing. He's got
That's true, itself. Actually. He was like 20 years before Hellblazer 2 in the comics. So.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the aspects of the Doctor Strange that... Now, see, when I reading the comics, as far as I know, Doctor Strange has always had the Eye of Agamotto. Why did they not let him keep it? That's... in the movie,
because it's going to be a story point about somebody taking the Infinity Stone, presumably
right.
in the Infinity War movie.
Yeah,
I don't know, because they've already figured out what that story point is and they want it to be there. I don't know. It doesn't bother me that, because you know that he'll get it back and he'll have it, because he doesn't look like Doctor Strange without the medallion.
I know.
Gotta have the red cape and the big medallion.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, why'd he give it back? But, yeah, and let's talk about that cape. How about that cape? Man.
I loved it.
Especially beating up the lackey. That was one of the coolest scenes, I thought. And then he, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, because the cape likes Doctor Strange. It chose him.
They really treated it like the flying carpet in Aladdin, you know, where it's this, it's a lot like that. But I can't believe I would say that and then say, and I loved it. But it was really fun. Like, the movie is full of these really charming little touches. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's one of the things that they know how to do, is they know how to rock through this whole set, you know, and put in all the great little touches that you love and funny little jokes and nice little bits of fan service. Like, did you catch the part where he was driving in the car on the, you know, dangerous ride, you know, the fateful ride, and the guy's telling him what his possible cases are? Did you catch the one that was the Marvel reference?
Oh, no.
They talk about, the guy says, well, I think the first one he says is there's something to the effect of, oh, there's an Air Force colonel who was, who has, you know, had a spinal injury from wearing an armored battle suit, you know, and that's obviously Rhodey from, Civil War.
Okay. I didn't.
It's just a nice little connection, you know.
Yep. Yeah, definitely so. And then I loved it. A couple of scenes of New York. They showed the Avengers Tower in the distance. I thought that was a nice touch. It's like, oh yeah, there it is. I mean, just little things like that, but got me. Yeah. But I should have paid more attention to that. I was actually just thinking, okay, here's where his accident happens.
Right. But I want to say, okay, here's another good thing I can say about the movie, is if it's completely generic in terms of its kind of hero's origin story formula. Mm-hmm. What I like about it is they don't waste your time. Like, you get one scene of him in the hospital where you get an idea of how good he is and also how arrogant he is. Yeah. Then you get a no dialogue scene at home where it's him getting ready to go out, and you see how large this dude lives, and you see how materialistic he is, and you see him come roaring out in, I don't know, a Lamborghini or something. Right.
Right.
And I see him go out to the coast road, and I'm like, damn, it's 15 minutes in and they're going to have the accident. This is great, you know, because I mean, you compare it to like the 1979 Doctor Strange TV movie where 75% of it is really boring 70s Doctor Show stuff.
Right, right. You know?
And I really appreciated that they were just like, nobody's going to be interested in that crap. Just get rid of it. And they just like click, 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 and they go through it. And that leaves you open for a really long, mind-blowing astral travel scene, you know, which all of which lives up to how crazy it is in the comics. I thought I really think that, you know, Marvel immediately from the get-go with Iron Man, Marvel Studios has really led the pack on how you visualize superpowers in a movie. And I think that they really, like, as each character's come in, like I would say that the way they visualize Captain America in action is so much better than I could have imagined it would be, you know, like over and over they do this. And I really feel like with Doctor Strange, like with the glyphs and things that would appear in front of him and whatever, it looks like a Marvel movie aesthetic version of Steve Ditko's original drawings, you know, and like those super trippy realms he would go through, you know, it looks like that. And I really like that. I mean, I think that it's great. I really hope, I agree that the time travel thing is a total cheat. And I mean, and the thing is, time travel is always a total cheat, and it's all in how well you use it. Like I never complain when Hermione does it in the third Harry Potter story, right? Because because when they go back and redo all of it, it is so gripping and entertaining watching them try to hit the marks, you know, that they have to do. And you know, if you do that, you have to do it right. And otherwise, you've got like Superman the movie where the entire audience groans as he flies around the world and turns it backwards. Right. To, you know, so you can really mess that up. And I thought in this movie, as unearned as his rapid dismissal of Dormammu was, it was so funny.
Yeah.
And it fits so well with Stephen Strange's gift for casual brilliance.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I was willing to forgive it. But that said, they're going to have to find a way to put a chain on that, because otherwise, you know, how do you stop him? You know, I also shouldn't say that, because that goes along with the same school of thought that says Superman is too powerful to be an interesting character, which only means that the writer is not sufficiently imaginative.
Yeah, but look what they do most of the time, at least with modern Superman, is they, you know, they can't think of anything except tying a piece of kryptonite around his neck. No,
exactly.
This time we'll make it a kryptonite gas.
Right, right. Or Lex Luthor will shank him with kryptonite. Or, but that's the thing about this movie is, you know, you faithful listeners at home, you've heard us complain about all the things that bugged us in this movie, but overall it's really charming. Mm-hmm. It's a feast for the eyes. I mean, it brings this new style, a brand new, totally different style of action into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I can't wait to see it, you know, to see Spider-Man, I mean, get dragged into one of those dimensions maybe, or, you know, or what's going to happen when it's him, Thor, and Loki, you know, on the streets of New York in the next Thor movie. You know, I presume he's going to have a cameo.
Yeah, that's what's got my imagination going, is how he is going to interact with the Avengers and how he's going to fit into the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. It's kind of cool that because he's going to be working a side of the fence that none of the other Avengers can get to. So that kind of gives him a very unique role in things. I'm excited to see how he gets worked into the universe.
From the teaser, it looked like he's definitely going to be in Thor Ragnarok. That's where I guess anyway. So
all right. Well, now something I should bring up, and this is, you know, you guys may totally disagree with me, but I totally felt that from the trailers, I could see the Inception influence. The whole mirror world is very much, you know, a use of the same visual tricks that they used for Inception. It's not and I don't fault them that, you know, it's technology. It's like with The Matrix, which is another film that gets borrowed from liberally in this. But after Matrix, you know, everyone was using the bullet time special effects. So it's not like Inception owns that particular visual effect. But,
they finally put that kind of effect in a movie that's actually watchable. I mean, Inception is garbage.
Oh, I like I like
no, Inception. Inception is a lousy, lousy movie, and it's not going to stand the test of time. But that said, okay, but what I will say is that one of the things that was crushingly disappointing about Inception for me was that all of the really eye-popping cool moments were in the trailer, and after that, you just spend a lot of time dealing with a plot that doesn't make any sense and a character that's impossible to like. So, like, for me, well, okay, but basically what I'm saying is that there's this really, like, horrible literal-mindedness about Inception that means that, yeah, you get this city folding and you get a couple of cool shots of it, but in this movie, it was off the chain. I mean, they completely just dove in and went all the way with it, and you didn't have this kind of regal constipation of Christopher Nolan. You know, you had they really went in and threw you into that world. And I thought it was okay. I guess I really didn't realize how much I didn't like Inception, but no, in truth, when I saw Inception, I thought that stuff all looked great, but you know, then you're stuck with people in vans chasing each other with machine guns. I mean, which is like the most boring thing in the universe. And I liked in this movie that they really, really tried not to be boring. And that's not something you can say about Inception. I mean, this is a movie that really, really, really wanted to keep you engaged and worked hard to keep you engaged and worked hard to top itself as it went on. It wasn't just kind of one or two really strong set pieces and then kind of a lot of, I don't know, whatever.
But I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only person who saw The Ancient One as being a stand-in for Morpheus, that the mirror world was kind of like the Matrix in the Matrix. And I also got and again, this is coming from someone who hasn't read these comics. So I'm comparing this with other movies other superhero movies that I've seen, you know, within the past decade or two. And I was also reminded very heavily, I mean, how can you not be, of Batman when, mm-hmm. you know, when Strange goes to the Himalayas to train. And, you know, I mean, I don't see how you cannot draw a comparison because it is so similar to Batman's story.
I will also point out that was not added to Batman's story until at least 10 years after it was in Doctor Strange's story. Okay. Just wanted to say that.
Nope.
Okay. So Strange did
that,
it first. Okay.
Wasn't that a Frank Miller?
Where are we that we didn't have to watch him pretend to climb that mountain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, right? Wasn't
that
early?
I was thankful for that.
they did it better.
Yeah.
Like what he found at the monastery wasn't as dumb as what Bruce Wayne found in Batman Begins. Because let's face it, the whole Ra's al Ghul thing doesn't make a lick of sense. In that movie, it doesn't.
Nope.
Yes, we let the city get a certain distance and then we kill it. Why? Because it's badass. I don't know.
Because they had stock footage of mountains. I don't know. Yeah.
This is me ragging on all the movies Eric brings up. I'm sorry, Eric.
I'm not saying that I'm not putting these movies out there as being like, you know, the glowing examples of how to do a film or even great films. They're all problematic. I do like Inception, but it is definitely problematic and has some script issues. I was just simply saying that there are going to be comparisons made, whether or not the makers actually directly took inspiration from The Matrix or from Inception or from Batman. I don't know. All I know is that as a filmmaker, I go in having seen, or as a film goer going in to watch this movie, having seen all these other films, I can't help but make those connections. And not knowing whether this was original, you know, who did it first and what's in the comics and what was created by the writers, it all kind of becomes a big jumble. Right.
Yeah.
I want to say this, that when I saw the trailers, I saw that visuals that I recalled from Inception, and it's been a long time since I've seen Inception. But I thought, it's like, from the trailers, I'm like, oh, well, they're going to use that again. And I think it was just like you said with The Matrix. After The Matrix, everybody used that slow motion bullet thing.
Yeah.
But this time around, when I saw this, though, once I saw the movie, then I realized, okay, yeah, they kind of had the idea of what Inception did, but they took it a lot further and did a whole lot more with it, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I kind of question acting like The Ancient One is some kind of a ripoff of Morpheus, because if the idea of the callow character who comes to have his mind expanded by, you know, by a wise one,
a master. Yeah. That's,
you know,
goes
I mean,
way beyond Matrix. Yeah.
That was already, you know, I mean, it was old when Yoda did it, you know, it's, it goes way, yeah. way, way back. Like it probably goes back, like, honestly, well, okay, you can get all pretentious in George Lucas and say, you know, Joseph Campbell, oh, it goes back to the dawn of time and blah, blah, blah. But just in terms of pop culture, I mean, definitely it goes all the way back to the pulps and all of the different guys that went off to the Himalayas to get their secret knowledge. You know, yeah. that's like the Shadow did it. Doc yep. Savage did it. It's something that happens over and over again in pulps. And there's always an old wise character. Well, just in the comics, the Ancient One is an old Tibetan guy. You know, he's yeah. not a Celtic woman, you know, of indeterminate age. He's just a really old dude. But yeah. but I don't know. I mean, I think that that's kind of what we're talking about with this is that we wish that this movie would have been fresher, the recipe, that it would have been fewer, yeah. had fewer predictable ingredients. But what's there is served up with a lot of style and verb. Generally.
I agree.
And
actually, that's something that we should talk about, though, is the changing the Ancient One's race, because that was a big deal when it got announced and people accused the film of whitewashing. And what I actually read was that the reason that decision was made was because China is such a huge market for these films now that they, by making him a Tibetan priest or whatever, that they were afraid they were going to piss China off and lose money on it, which now that I've seen the film doesn't seem to hold water because he still goes to Tibet and
he goes
still
to Nepal.
Oh, Nepal, but you're right.
Yeah. Nepal and Tibet are not the, yeah, it's Nepal is the safe, politically correct choice.
Yeah, that's there you go. You're right. Yeah. and I do have to say that even though they didn't give her much to do, not that, you know, not as much as I would have liked to seen. I would have liked to seen a little more development of the Ancient One. But I mean, the actor, that Tilda Swinton, that they got to play the role, is amazing. And everything that she's ever done, she has this kind of ethereal quality in everything she does, and she just is magnetic when she's on screen. So I have to give them props on casting her, because I thought she was fine, especially like Cumberbatch. She rose above the lack of development and lack of background that wasn't in the writing with her performance.
Yeah, she's man, I'll tell you what, time and again, Marvel gets just the right mega actor to be in the movie and completely sell it, you know, like I'm right. thinking of Tommy Lee Jones, for instance, you know, or, you know, in the first Captain America movie, or Jeff Bridges in the first Iron Man movie, you know, these people who are incredibly like accomplished big actors, and they bring them in for just the right part and it's perfect. So yeah, I agree with you completely. She was great.
Yeah.
Like I feel bad for them, because when you're dealing with something like the character of the Ancient One, you put the character on screen as written and he's a stereotype.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you get people yelling at you. You change her to a woman and she becomes a different stereotype, the old dragon lady, right? So you change her to Tilda Swinton and try to make her undeterminate, whatever, Celtic, I guess.
Yeah.
And then beef up the role of the other Asian character, Wong, you know? And then you still get people yelling at you, but at least you've got Tilda Swinton in the movie. So I'm not going to complain.
Nope. Well, and that's the thing. Let's bring a wrap up to this summary of Doctor Strange. First, let's of course agree that we, you know, hey, it's a great movie. We loved it. It's not, again, maybe not one of Marvel's top movies. It's not Guardians. It's not Winter Soldier. It's, or was it Winter Soldier? Was it? Yeah, yeah. It's just, yeah. But it is one of those good movies. And it's Marvel did it right once again. And we didn't have the train wreck that is Batman v Superman. We had a good movie right. that's going to build on into another yeah. future. But us being who we are, we like to find our little parts and nitpick. So we did. And I'm with you, Tim. You said you'd recommend it to anybody. I would recommend it to definitely anybody. I would say, hey, even if you've never seen a comic book movie, go see this one. It's a lot of fun. And you definitely will enjoy the visuals for sure. Although you'll probably get lost in them like I did. Maybe I should see the non-3D version. I wonder how that would be. Did you guys
see it? A lot of people who've seen the 3D version are saying that they want to go see the 2D version now. Yeah. But Kevin Feige did say in interviews that the 3D is the intended version to see of this particular film, because yeah. of all the visuals. But you know, it wasn't nearly as cool as the 3D in Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's better than some of the Marvel 3D films have been.
Yeah, you guys all saw it in 3D.
Yes.
Okay, Eric.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I don't know why. I just felt I had to. And you're right. I think the visuals and they kind of, you know, they did say this, that is the version to see. But yeah, I think I definitely want to see
knockout.
It again.
It's a knockout in 3D. Yeah. I absolutely think it's like Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's the best way to see it.
Yeah,
it has to be.
Yeah. And I think this time I think I want to see it. Yeah. I know I want to see it again, and I think I want to see it in 2D just out of curiosity. Because like I said, I mean, it was a cool feeling that I got lost in all those visual effects, but. Maybe there's something I missed. I don't know. I'll check it out in 2D and we'll see what happens there. But before we do that, before we close out for the day, because hey, you know, this has been one of those podcasts that we covered one topic in the 1 hour. But I got to throw something else out there.
In depth.
Yes. I got to throw something else out there. Are any of you guys watching the DC World on television on CW?
I'm watching Supergirl and The Flash.
Okay. Eric, are you watching?
None of the above.
Okay.
Nope.
One of the things, this season, they're going to have a huge crossover with all of those episodes, all those series. And one of the things, they're starting to build up to it. You can see with the different characters they're bringing in. But one thing I was loving, the last episode of Arrow, they brought in Christopher Chance. I think it's Christopher. Anyway, Chance, he's the Human Target. They had their own series. Yep. They had a series, Human Target, for a while, or Second Chance. I forget what it's called. And anyway, they brought him on Arrow.
Yeah, Human Target was great.
Yeah, and is based on a comic book character. They brought him in on Arrow, but I wish they had used the same actor that was in that. But anyway, he came in on that and is like, oh, and he took the place of Oliver Queen and at the end of it took off the rubber mask, kind of Mission Impossible style, and is like, oh, hey, that guy just stood in for you. And it's like, yeah, he owed me a favor. And then anyway, so they're bringing him in, but this I can't wait. This huge crossover has just got to happen, and it's going to be really cool. I heard that there are more costumed heroes in these episodes than you've ever seen and on television before. So this ought to be interesting. But I want to bring, I want to ask Tim, Supergirl, what do you think of Superman's representation on there?
You know, okay. Top line, I liked it a lot. It was weird. It was really weird because it was a very TV representation of Superman.
Oh, yeah.
And what I mean by that is, like, you know, Christopher Reeve, like, really seemed like Superman come to life. Like, he was big. It's just in terms of, like, the purity of his whole thing and all that. I don't know what I mean by that, but this guy seems much more just like a regular guy, but I liked him. He wasn't a jerk.
Right.
He wasn't like confused about what's right and what's wrong. He wasn't constantly accidentally murdering people, you know, or looking like he was going to like, but this is important to me. You know, I mean, I remember like on the podcast last year after the Supergirl finale, just saying, you know, that I had been really depressed about what kids today think of Superman, like what their idea of Superman is. Based on these crappy DC movies but then that Supergirl kind of saved my feelings on it, because I realized that kids still have access to what the character is supposed to stand for. And I thought that the version they put on screen of actually Superman and not just Supergirl was great for that. I think any kid who watches the show will see that and get a really good idea of what Superman's supposed to be all about. So yeah, I liked him.
Yeah, me too. I was like, "Hey, finally!" I couldn't put my finger on it, but that, I think you put it best there. It's a good, really good TV version of Superman, and I think that guy. I don't think they could put him as a movie version. That what they did there, unless they did a lot more making him bigger, you know. But that was a perfect representation, and that's what we needed. It wasn't the one we deserved. It's the one we needed. But anyway, I thought that was really nice. And I think he's going to be making an appearance whenever they do the crossover. So I just can't wait. I've been looking forward to this season because of that. I'm caught up on all the Legends of Tomorrow, which I don't know. That series kind of there's been a couple episodes where it's like, eh. And then there's been a couple that have been really good. So it's kind of a hit and miss series. But the one thing I found very entertaining to know is that the ratings for all the CW shows that are non-superhero based are just tanking. but the superhero based shows, they're doing really well, especially Flash and Supergirl. Yeah. So it's like they're going to be the superhero.
Oh, that's excellent.
Network. Yeah, it is. It's a good feeling. So, but superhero or Supergirl and Flash are the best on the ratings wise for them. So, and I can see that too. Those are the most fun. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's see here. I guess we should call an end to this because I got to go see Jack Reacher here in a little bit. Don't know why, other than, you know, I gotta. So, you know what, Eric? Next time we talk, let's talk about Inferno because I'm supposed to go see that sometime this week too. So, let's bring up Inferno. But real quick, overall, just a real quick synopsis here. What do you think? I heard you say something about don't waste my time.
I read the book and I went into it knowing that when you read the book and then see the movie, it's going to always be a disappointment. So my expectations were already very, very low, and somehow it managed to it busted through the basement floor into the netherworld. It's so freaking bad. I mean, it's not that it's badly made. It's just that they took one set piece after another out of the book and didn't use any of the cool history, science, art stuff that that Brown puts into the background of all of his books. And the ending, have you read the book?
No, not that one. I read the first two books.
Right. Well, the book has lots of problems. It's not his best book by any stretch of the imagination. But even with that said, the movie fails to impress on any level. And the few things about the book that made it unique and an interesting read, they completely gutted from the film. So anyway, I'll go into a bit more detail next.
Okay, time. Yeah, because I'm going to see it anyway, and I loved Da Vinci Code the book, and Angels and Demons for me was pretty good, and I just kind of didn't have interest in reading the third book, Inferno, but I did see the first two movies, and I thought they cut a lot of them out of the movies from the book that should have been in the movies, and that's the way they do it, so.
Well, and there was a third story that was never made into a film, and I'm not sure why. In fact, I was thinking that it was Robert Langdon wasn't in that book, but he was. It was the Symbol.
Oh, I never. Oh, didn't
which
even
was
know
a much
one.
Better book, and I don't know why they didn't turn that into a film first. Or who knows?
We'll see. All right. Well, next time that's one of the movies we'll talk about. Maybe talk about Luke Cage. And whatever else we come up with. In the meantime, that's it for the podcast this week because it's time to go see Jack Reacher for some reason. Anyway, I'm Guilty Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
I'm Tim Coker, and theoretically I'm reachable on Twitter at Tim K Has to Say.
All right. Well, that's it.
Say theoretically because I never check it.
One of these days, I don't know. Nobody ever writes me on Twitter. I just send out a bunch of weird stuff anyway. So, that's it for the podcast. As we say each and every single week, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.